I went through, we have 18 tapes.
18 tapes?
18 tapes. Should I read you what we have? I went through them all. I mean, I had notes on all of them, you see, and then the ones I didn't have notes on, I did a couple weeks ago. Okay, the first one was when I first met you. And we did, it was an overall thing. Then we went into a little bit of your background in Hungary and your early work in Chicago. That was the second one. The third one, we traced your union involvement, talked about what happened in World War I when you were a chair lady in the shop, and then the developments leading to Local 275.
That's 1920.
Yeah, that was the third tape. Then the fourth tape, we talked about when you were chair lady. That was the period, that tape covered 1918 to 1923, and it covered the fight in the Union in 1923. The fifth tape was the formation of the Women's Local and your activities as business agent.
1922,
yeah. Then the sixth tape was return to the shop, the Philadelphia Convention, Brookwood, and the conference in Washington, D.C. The seventh case, we talked about the hysterectomy.
Oh, my God, that was in 27.
The Women's Bureau, the fight on the convention floor over the Women's Bureau.
That was 28, wasn't it?
Yeah, 28.
Yeah.
Oh, that case, the seventh case and the eighth case both covered that same thing. And the eighth tape, we also started talking about when you got more involved in the Socialist Party. And the ninth tape was about Bryn Mawr. When you were on that committee.
I sent a leaflet to my niece in Chicago, and I said, she sent me a copy of Lillian Erskine.
Oh, yeah.
No, you didn't see this one.
She wrote back again?
Yes.
Oh.
She was 86 years, 88 years old, I guess. So I wrote my niece and I sent her one of those leaflets. I said, if she get a hold of Lillian, send her a copy of this. So she did. She thanked her for it, and she said, I had lunch with Sarah before. I got the letter somewhere, so I'll show it to you next time. I don't even bother it now. But I mean, she remembered, and she was she was bigger than a minute. Oh, she went through life. And then she was a big personality on the board of directors with Bryn Mawr, representing the English department, women in industry, women in industry, I guess, and I represented women in industry from the YWCA of all things. You see, now, what connection that I have with YWCA. I did, because it's the industrial department.
But that was after Brookwood. After Brookwood, they contacted you.
That was, yes, I guess it was after Brookwood.
Yes, because I have here that when we talked about being on the board of Bryn Mawr, that was the period about beginning about 1933.
Yes, oh yes, I was connected with the industrial department. I think back, the international YWCA, I met in convention room, supposed to be a Christian organization. My interest was because it was women in industry, see? So I didn't give a hoot, no more than I do. There's the calendar that I have from Jerusalem, Israel, from the little gate off from home. I support It's the girls. I mean, that's my... Ask me why. As I say, because I must be for women in my mother's womb.
We got to that later, too.
Mm.
One thing. Okay, so that was number nine. Was the board of Brynmore, the depression, the problems, and the shock. So that was the period 1933 to 1938. Then number 10 is 1938, coming to L.A., the internal politics of the union here. And we talked about women in the L.A. local. That brought us to 1940. Number 11 was L.A. from 1938 to 1940. We talked about the feminist identification, and we talked about Dick. That brought us to 1947. Then the next one was number 12. We talked more about the fights in L.A., 1938 to 1940. Lou Art, 1947 to 1953, the fight about the chairman. Then, number 13, 1938 again, the laundry strike. More details about it. The 1953 election at Lou Art, and then the Lou Art program. Number 14 was attitudes about the Soviet Union, power of the rank and file, attitudes about women, experiences of women in the amalgamated, the scholarship. Then 15, the whole tape we talked about women, attitudes towards women. 16, we went back and did much more detail about your early years in Hungary and the trip over. Because remember what happened, I thought we taped it, we never did. I started looking at the notes about your European trip.
Oh.
And I said, well, wait, we better go back and you better tell me more details about your trip over and your years in Hungary. Then number 17 was the development of your concern for women and where that came from, and capitalism.
I didn't get them.
The development of your concern about women and where that came from, we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
And then capitalism. Then number 18 was your facade of toughness.
My what?
Your facade of being tough.
Oh.
That women in L.A., that Washington, D.C. conference, and the effects of Brookwood. So, chronologically, where we ended up really was at your retirement. Now, here's what I had. I took some notes that I thought should be in here to close it. Your retirement in 1958. What were your plans for the continued union involvement after that? And what happened? I'll just read to you what I think, and then you tell me what else you think we should cover. The role in the fight about Reutemann. You were somehow involved in that, even though you were retired. And the relationship to the women out in Banning there. About your European trip, especially the impressions of the unions, how they were different from here, how the women's role was different in unions, how you felt about returning to Hungary. Then your connections to the union after 1962-63. Then attitudes towards the women's movement now. Then I wanted you to trace your changes in attitudes towards women in the union, changes in the union, things like the changes in the role of the rank and file, the socialist vision, changes in your own beliefs, and then visions that you have about for the union, for a social society, and for women. I mean, we have to do all at once. But I thought after going through it all, that to round it out, that should all be
embodied
in it. Now, is there anything else? And then your vision and attitude towards the women's movement, I want to get involved in a discussion of the coalition thing too then, you see. So we can either go back and start with...
Well, you have to, you see, you have to go back because you cannot go... most of it is from memory. You had some notes. There are some notes that I took, but most of it are really from memory.
Yeah, but I mean, we can either go back to your retirement and start there and work on up to the present.
Well, it's up. You can go back
to
there.
Okay, well, let's go back to there.
Yeah.
That's where we ended really in terms of time. So what we should start with...
After I retired, I still kept up my activities. I attended meetings, and I ran on picket lines. I used to get up, I was able to walk yet. I was there many times. I was in the office at 6 o'clock. I was on the picket line for hours, distributing leaflets and speaking to workers to join the union, trying to influence them. And then occasionally I'd speak to, especially to 408, and then...
What was 408?
Sports were local.
In L.A.?
L.A. And then once in a while I'd go out to Gunning. Now I was in constant touch with girls from many women from the West Coast locals. That's Dunning, Arizona, Phoenix. And didn't you come across some of the letters from...
Wait, last time you showed me the letter when you went to Phoenix.
Oh, yes, I...
And you met those women on the picket line.
Yes, but I...
Oh, the woman in Banning?
Yeah. The woman in Banning.
Well, how did you get... How did you get...
When I retired... This was before I retired. I was in Arizona. But then I was after I retired.
Well, how did they get in touch with you?
Erin Reitman.
Oh.
Didn't say, and then the girls, the women. I was in touch with them. And the San Diego women, you saw the standing invitation I had from them to come out.
What was it that they wanted you to do?
They wanted me to appear before their meetings and speak to them.
About women?
About the organization, the history of the Amalgamated, and especially about women. It's because I kept on talking to them always. I used to get a hold of them when Banning and from... Where is the city I mentioned a while ago?
Phoenix
from... here.
Oh, San Diego?
San Diego. I used to get home in the washroom and pound into their heads. I said, you're 98% of them. Why don't you see to that you have a woman representative? They pick out a man here to send him out to you. They don't know anything about your situation. So you're in constant touch.
Oh, so they, when they come up here to meet you?
They come here every once a month. Mm. And I will ask them, unless you see the special delivery letter and all that I should come out. Because they had offices. Mama. Of the important ones. They were secretaries, you see. I couldn't be still. Somehow, something was lacking. Well, was lacking. It took a hell of a long time to get them to join the union to begin with. After all, Los Angeles was when I came out, already there was some semblance of a union. footed with an altogether impossible. For instance, when Hilda came out, she came out sometime before I did. And they got together and with Sadie Goodman and collected among themselves pennies to rent an office space. That was just unheard of. Then later, of course, we had it with the lefts, and I insisted on getting somebody out here. The existing manager at the time was, as far as you were concerned, didn't perform properly. He was originally from Chicago. Now, there's also politics. Wherever you turn, I finally succeeded in persuading Frank Rosenman to get the man out here that I wanted. That was the very same man that didn't want Chetta to work for be transferred. And he said, he was chairman. But you see, I never went by what they did personally. It wasn't a question. I sized up the man, and he was like Frank himself.
But this is all earlier. You're talking now back again.
Yes, I'm going back. I told you that I'll go back and forth. Because
okay.
I can't. It's impossible to go chronologically exactly according to the way it happened. It would be impossible for me. Now, on the other hand, I did the very same thing in this. Well, this knew that I was instrumental and was happy to be successful in bringing him out. I was tortured physically in the same factory just several years before. And I paid no attention to that. Because I analyzed the man's ability that he would make a good man for this particular area. And he was. But in the end, he got himself mixed up with a woman and was taken out. And even then, you saw some of the...
Mm-hmm.
He appealed to me and told me to destroy the world and all that. Well, I just didn't do it for this reason, because he was as far as an organizer, far as knowing the industry, far as being knowledgeable, from the thread to the finish of the garment. Was very qualified for it. I made no mistake about that. And he had made some great progress while he was here. I made that one mistake, like most men do.
Well, Sarah, when did Reutemann appear on the scene? Reutemann.
Reutemann?
Yeah, when did he...
Reutemann came, I believe, he became very mistaken. Listen, there is an envelope right in there.
I have to go into it. Also, the women out in Banning were calling on you for help when this fight was going on with Reutemann.
Mm-hmm.
You had obviously established a relationship with Reutemann of trust.
I established a relationship with Reutemann when he came out here. It was 43 or 44. I don't remember exactly. I have to ask him that.
Well, in 1943?
43 or 44. There was, you couldn't rent a hole in the wall. I made room for him. My home was Grand Hotel for anybody that didn't find a place to.
Well, you knew him from Chicago?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't?
No. I met him in the Union office and he appealed to me. And he came into before Ruth came in, it was Griselda, that took care of the educational department, plus organizing. And being that I was chair lady in Lewis, I helped to organize a library committee, an educational committee. Aside from the general, if I say I made a replica of the general organization. And that's how I met Reitman. He took an interest in the education department.
So you established a relationship with him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very shortly after.
And then when was he made physicist?
I think 47.
But you obviously had a great deal of respect for each other.
Oh, yeah. Now, here is something that may interest you.
Now, when did, right after you stayed involved in with these women from Benning, and you went on the picket line, I think.
In Benning? No, I went there to address the local meeting.
Okay, but then a fight started about Reutemann in 62 or something.
Well, in Benning?
Well, the women in Benning were appealing to you to help. There was some fight going on about Reutemann, and you got somehow played a role in it, and that's what I wanted to find out.
I don't get your question, honey.
They were trying to get rid of Reutemann or something. It wasn't clear what was going on.
Yeah, they did get rid of him. They got rid of him.
Well, the women in Banning were writing you letters appealing for your help.
No. I wrote to them, they wrote to me. But I have nothing to do with that. I wouldn't go into that.
Okay, so you didn't play a role in all of that?
I did. I spoke to Frank about it. And there was still talking about it. I don't know enough about it.
Okay, well, I'm mainly trying to find out
what are you trying to find out?
After your retirement, what your time and your role was in the union after you retired.
After I retired, I went on picket line and attended meetings. And I kept up my activities for...
What are you looking for then?
I'm looking for when... He became business agent.
Now, were there any special things that you remember that you did or that happened after your retirement? Were there any special things that you remember after your retirement that you were involved in?
No. After I retired?
Yeah.
Nothing special. No, I was...
Well, when did you stop being as active?
When I stopped being able to carry on.
When was that?
I went that horse. When did I stop driving the car? In 1969.
So until 1959 now.
Yeah, I was still active.
You were still going on picket lines?
I was still active in 69.
Well, is there anything else in that time period that we should cover from the time of your retirement, after your retirement? Because we talked about the scholarship fund and the fight for that.
I went back many times to inquire what they're going to do about it, and they kept on delaying it and postponing it. I went to Ruth Miller had tried in a nice way, and she blamed the business lady. She said, they don't want to cooperate. And I went to the manager, and the manager said he's going to get in touch with the secretary of the AFL-CIO and try and do something. And they dropped the whole thing eventually. So I got tired forcing it on. That's why you left that note there. I'd like to know. They have scholarships. And I told them then. I said, it's easy. When Frank Rosenwald, Potocki, or any of them, they get scholarship to the university, but when somebody like me that works with a machine, and is not interested in anything like that, that's when a man bites a dog bites a man. You know, I give that illustration. I said, what happens to these members' children after they get the scholarship? And keep a record of them? What do they contribute to the labor movement? I want to know. I'd like to know. Wouldn't you? If you were a member of the union? I asked him.
So basically what you did was just after you retired, for a while you were able to go on the picket lines and things, and then you just decided to be a thorn in their side, basically, isn't it?
I didn't get to your question.
But after you could no longer be so active,
yeah,
once you couldn't drive anymore and get around as well,
yeah,
you basically played the role of just being pricking their conscience all the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, sure. And every time I go down there, you see, I was a bone of contention in Chicago as well as in Los Angeles, because I wasn't a yes man. And that's pretty difficult, you know. It's much easier to get along and to make ends meet economically, financially, if you're a goody-goody. It so happened, it was my good fortune that I was endowed by the devil or God, by nature, that I was a hustler, a fast worker, that I made a living in spite of it. At the end, they wouldn't let me make a living. I want you to know, after 50 years, my work was no good. I wasn't going to retire. I had no intention. Every time that I retired was as remote from me as you are from the moon today. Not the work so much. My activities. I love to be active. And I wanted to further my activities. I wanted to further this educational move that I started. And that, you can go through the record and find that nowhere, this you'll find again, it may be repetitious, but it's so. Nowhere in the entire amalgamated outfit can you find its equivalent, where one particular factory would have an entire setup equal in the general office. An educational enterprise, a library committee, a social committee, a picket committee, whatever you wanted, that was all there. You see, I enjoyed doing that.
Well, but did you think that retiring was going to necessarily bring an end to it? Why?
They didn't want it. It was too much power. It was too much. As soon as I stepped out, as soon as I was declared, as you'll find in my papers, all this was denovated. Now, for instance, you'll find there was one, well, I got his name down here. It was a 1910 strike. I can't help it. I was partial. Yes, you'd have a thousand people like that. people that risk their lives to build a union. Sure, I did what I could to see that their livelihood is that they sustain themselves adequately, not out of the ordinary, but certainly I wouldn't allow them to be harassed. And as soon as I stepped down, they met me, so he fainted, and the result was he died. I mean, such became the condition. I've got that damn lucky.
So, Carol, once you were forced to retire, you knew that your activities were going to be a lot more.
Well, now, wait a minute. So I decided this. I was false to myself and false to everybody else. I wasn't honest in this respect. I never, to this day, look for sympathy or a handout. And that is maybe my hunky in me. I didn't want to drop dead in the shop. And as you know, I said when I was in Arizona, I'm not going to stay the world alone. What I'm going to do remains to be seen now. You see, I prepared myself for it. I would have stayed down if they would let me know and be active. I would stay down maybe up till now.
Mm.
That's it. I've got nothing out of this but a lot of nonsensical talk.
No, I wanted to try and find... See, because here you were so active after all these years, your whole commitment was to the union, and then facing retirement meant what?
And now, when I come to the office, you see, it's so rotten. They kiss me and they respect me. I don't know, you were there. Why don't they do it to Sadie Goodman? And I hate to draw the comparison. When Frank was here, they told him, they pointed out, why doesn't Sadie, so he said, do you compare Sadie to Sarah? Yeah, he got mad to compare. I hate to say this, because Sadie's a... What's wrong with her? She was devoted to the union as much as I was. She was just as devoted to the union as I was. And she was unfortunate because she was a slow worker. She was an artist at her work. She was a buttonhole maker. I wasn't satisfied just being an automobile or something. I ran on from one thing to another. See, I was more aggressive. That's all. But as far as being a trade unionist, no, I was interested in other things. I was interested in life too. Whether she ran away with her imagination. She lived vicariously as far as love is concerned. I mean, life is young. But there's nothing wrong with her.
But in a sense, though, you faced a disappointment because you thought when you retired that still you can keep some tie and be active. Didn't you?
I was active. I was active until I was able to. Then the whole thing changed. You see, this, I introduced you to Posner. And that, you see, I was ready to commit violence. I mean, literally. I was literally ready to kill him. That's how I raised that. I said, why? And I said to him, How can I desert him such a to think about it? Now, there are people, I look around and see, in my presence, they tell him, you're not my boss, you're not what you used to be. You know, when he was manager used to stuck around. See, I never, if I would have just gone along with him, There would be no question about it. And I don't know whether you came across one of the letters where he asks me to meet him. And that he swears up and down that he's never meant to harm and all that. Which is a lie. It is a lie because it's not only he, but the whole, they gang up on. They do that, I mean, they do that politically. See, politically I was a thorn in their eyes.
Well, did you have any allies among the leadership?
Among the leadership? Who had? No! I had allies. I had the rank and file to back me. That's what I'm telling you. Now, the last straw, before, I think I wasn't cheered anymore. So the following. He brought in a proposal at a shop meeting, the manager. He had his gang with him, the business agent and shop chair, the new shop chairman. And I got up to oppose his proposition. Who carried? I carried. I mean, you see, I had the following. That's all. I didn't know. I never had the administration with me.
So, I mean, did Ruth ever stand up for you in these fights?
Never. Ruth, nor, that's what I told Irving Reitman. I said, you were no better. They were no better. You see, they all protected their behind. There was only one guy that probably believed he wasn't there anymore. And that was Schneid. He and I used to protect and defend one another. He didn't care if he lost his job. He did care. He did care, but it so happened that he was a fiery speaker and he had the rank of file not only from one city but from the country as a whole. He was an international known person. But other than that, I don't know anybody, you see, or Hilda Shapiro. And Hilda later didn't agree with me on everything either. I defended her. You see, she never had a chance to defend me. She didn't. You see, she didn't have. The only time, as I say, I met her is when I told you about when she seconded my motion. That was in the illegal. But after that, there was no question of her defending me. It was just always the other way around. Because later on she joined the Communist Party, the Trotskyite, whatever it was. But I was culture from that point. And they tried to put a label on me because I defended they put the communist in jail or something, and I put bail. To me it was a member of the American. I was so naive, I didn't know. I was very naive. I didn't.
Schneid is basically the only one in L.A. from whom you got support, among the leadership.
Well, he was an organizer. I didn't remember his support. I didn't need his support at that time.
Yeah, but when there were...
Well, I mean, in Chicago, we supported one another and came to a motion or something like that. Then he probably didn't have a vote. He was an organizer, had no vote. Mm. But if he brought up a point, I would follow too. I'd support him. I'd support his proposition.
And out here too, or just in Chicago?
Yeah, the same thing.
Yeah, okay.
See, it's a different proposition altogether. But you see, I'm glad to say, and never regret the fact, I did have the rank and file with me. The last straw, see, they were right in one thing. I wanted to give up chairmanship. But I wanted somebody that I could guide along my ideas. You see, I didn't want any Tom, Dick, and Harry to take over and destroy all what I, everything that I built up through the years. You see, the educational work, the picket lines, you know, all that. The respect from the employer. If a worker meant something there, and as soon as I got up, you see that the worker meant nothing. Was in cahoots with the chairman, I allow myself to get excited about it anymore, but I used to get awful. I did get so tense and upset about it. It's a lot of fooling now. It's a lot of business, now it's a business enterprise. Big business, big unions. And it would be terrible without it. To go back again, when I started out working, the employer was ignorant, illiterate, so was I. I was fortunate. I was young. A labor manager was representing the company, taught me how to add up the new rates. Put in a piece rate. I don't know. I knew what I wanted. I knew that our ambition is supposed to come so much and so much. No, he said, sir, the Schwarzman, he gave me the title. He says, 79 cents, and take up from $1.50 and so on. He guided me, you see. And another one went so far, I should come to his office. He was a professor of economics. He wanted to teach me everything. Well, I went to see him in jail afterward. When I went to Brookwood, he came to see me out. I was young. I suppose I had a certain amount of what they call charisma but I never made use of it. I mean, I didn't take advantage of it. But it was all right in those days. Today, I don't know. When they got heading the magazine, they said, they have two lawyers. You have a manager in Chicago who's a lawyer. Out here, we have Leonard Leary. He knew Gumba. He's very intelligent. And very well worse. And besides, he doesn't make a move without being confirmed.